Mr. Drake, Rio 14. Right, Mr. Drake, so we're still talking about the Battle of Sedgenay.
Yes, we formed this group of two officers, Captain Valance and Lieutenant Lax, Sergeant Dunn, Sergeant Aitchison, I'm not sure, Sergeant Lucas was with us at the time. Sergeant Walton, myself, and then various other ranks, making a complement of 20. And our objectives was to make us self known and defend between Sedgenhead and the hills. So the colonel was there to give us all the instructions, and he did announce that I would be in charge of the operation. Had anybody any objections? Well, in view of all what had passed before, I think he had a bit of confidence in me, and there was no objections from anybody. So I said, all right then, I says, we'll go down, follow the river route down. I says, there's a bit of a wog village or a few wog huts on the right-hand side of the river, but we'll approach down the river bank, so we're not getting fired on while we're going down there. I says, and what I propose to do then is we'll parade from the river bank to this wog clearing, which was surrounded by cactus trees, a few stone buildings with thatch roofs. I added the information that one of the companies had used that as an ammunition dump, and there was a lot of ammunition there. So I said, we'll move down the riverbank, and we moved down the riverbank, and then for probably between an hour and 2 hours, we did nothing but move from the riverbank to the little wog buildings and back again. Not in the marching order, but anyway, and we were going backwards and forwards for about an hour. My idea was, I knew Jerry was in the hills and he'd be watching us. So I knew he'd have his field glasses on us, so I wanted to make him appear that there was, he wouldn't know how many were in there and how many wasn't, you see. That was the idea. So after we got tired of doing that, I said, right, we'll assemble now in the, took them back into the clearing, and as I said, there was cactus trees, but we dug slit trenches just in front of the cactus trees. Everything was very quiet, nothing happening. We all got in the slit trenches. The two officers, Lieutenant Lax and Captain Balance, went into one of the huts, and there we found the load of ammunition. So I says, well, best thing to do, I says, is to get as many magazines filled as we can. Will you fill the magazines and keep the ammunition going, and keeping clips for rifles, filling them already so that we've plenty to go up when it does start. And so that what we were employed doing that until we started being shelled. So everybody were down, and I thought, well, there's not much chance of anybody being injured, because we were down below ground level sort of thing in the slit trenches, and they had a spell of that, and then that They gave us a bit of time then when they finished shelling, and then started with the mortars, and there were mortar bombs flying about all over the place, and we still stayed clear of that. So then there was a lull then. So I thought, I knew what was happening, they were going to come forward. So I put one Bren gun on his left flank, one on his right flank, so as they could cover all in front of them and crossfire and back again. So
how far were the flanks apart?
Oh, there'd be, I should say, about 50 yards apart from one end of the flank to the other. We could cover the whole front by that. And I give strict instructions that nobody must fire a shot until I said so. And I made that quite clear. Nobody must fire a shot until I say so. So I had a couple round back of a stack, if you may, a small A stack on his right. I had a couple, one at one side and one at the other, just with rifles, just in case they tried to filter round that side. And then I had a Bren rifleman and Bren again, and a rifleman just other side of the Bren, just in case they wanted to filter that way round. So I waited, and we waited, and we waited. Sure enough, they come, and we were in the best position, I knew that. So they had to come over open ground, and I knew they're in for a hammering as far as we were concerned. We were all loaded up ready, and they'd all got their ammunition as much as they could cope with at the time, and the officers were keeping all the, getting all the magazines filled with the munition which was already there. So sure enough, they came and came and they stood up and they walked towards us, and they thought, oh, they must be all dead. And that must have been in their mind, because they just walked towards us, towards this where we were sort of stationed in this particular wog clearing. And so I waited a while, they got within 100 yards before I gave a fire order. And then I said, right, lads, fire! And of course, both the Brens started, and we just simply mowed them down. Just simply mowed them down. They all fell flat. And the Brens were going from one side to the other, and we was getting very little fire back then. I mean, they were getting very little from them, just the odd machine gun would splatter through the, we could hear them splatter through the cactus trees. And I said, right, now, everybody, if you see anybody, we could see them as plain as day. I said, if you see any movement in anyone, put a bullet in them. So they knew exactly what to do, any movement at all, and they were, you'd hear the rifle go off. And I always remember Sergeant Dunn counting to 28 that he'd seen off by his own rifle. And I shouted to him, stop counting, Dunny. I said, just keep knocking them down. And I got a call from one of the lads from the A-stack that he could see some coming on that side, and there was a little mound which sort of obscured the view. So I grabbed one of the Brens and I said, I shouted to Sergeant Aitchison to take the Bren in front of this mound and creep up forward, and he would have there was plenty to shoot at. So He was in his trench there, and a few bullets were flying by. So he said he couldn't. He says there's too much fire coming around. So without any hesitation, I grabbed the gun myself and run it up. And sure enough, there were plenty to fire at, and I got the gun just over the mound with the pointing, and of course I ripped one or two magazines off, and then I shouted for Lance Corporal Gibson to bring some ammunition. I wanted more ammunition, so when he came up, he brought some more magazines, and I stuck another one in, and in the gun, put him behind the gun. Then I went back and carried on with the rest of the situation. We kept that up right until it was starting, daylight was fading, and we'd been there right from first thing in the morning, and it was getting dark on us, and of course we'd used a lot of ammunition up, and it was a sort of a bit of a lull, and we moved back into the encounter which we was engaged in, and then we found out that we'd more or less used more or less all the ammunition. We carried on until we'd used it all. So then we went inside into the centre of the place, and I was checking up who'd got any ammunition and who hadn't. The two Bren guns, both the barrels were bent to eternity. They were no good at all.
The both barrels for each gun?
There's two barrels for each gun, and of course you change every 10 magazines, you change them over so that one could cool off. But we'd been firing them that much, and so many rounds had gone through them that when I looked down the barrels, both barrels were bent on both guns, so they were kaput.
You only had the two guns?
We only had the two Brens. And we had moved them in different positions. Where the shouted, if a rifleman shouted, I wanted a Bren, the one would go up and see to it. And
so who was your other Bren gunner then?
Pardon?
Who was your other Bren gunner?
We passed it about, because there weren't any specified one. There was one who was my Bren gunner, and I just can't think of his name.
So quite a few of you?
Oh, well, we could all handle the Bren. Everyone, the rifleman, you could give it. We'd all been trained on the Bren gun, so they all could use the Bren gun. So it was whoever was available, they just used the Bren. Like I used it to go forward, and Lance Corporal Gibson came and take over me, and then I sent somebody up to help him with the feeding and pass him the magazine so that he could keep cope with what was going on.
So what about Sergeant Atchison? I mean, he disobeyed an order.
Yeah, well, he did, and I didn't give him any more orders. It was signed die as far as I was concerned. It disappointed me, and I couldn't care less at the time. I'd shown him that it could be done. Whereas East South, he couldn't get through. I didn't give him any specific orders after that, but I just carried on with the situation as it was. And
what about your two officers, Balance and Lax?
As I say, we assembled together, and we saw how many... We put what grenades we had. We put them down on the ground in front of us, and we lined all the grenades up, and I says, right, what we're going to do now? I says, he'll be sending patrols up. I says, I knew what we'd be coming, and in the meantime, he'd sent with it getting dark, he started with tracer bullets, and he set fire to the thatched roofs on the buildings. So the buildings that started blazing, the thatched roofs had, the buildings themselves were stone, so although we was underneath it, it weren't affecting us. And it did us a good turn because we could see what we were doing. And being behind the cactus trees, they couldn't see, but we could. It saw daylight on any patrol that might come up. So we lined them up, and I was the first, and went to the front where the cactus trees were, and sure enough, a patrol were coming up, and I let them get close enough and let off me two grenades. Then I came back and I said, next one, until all the grenades were used up. When once all the grenades had used up, that was it as far as we were concerned. We've no more firepower. Every bullet had been used up. So I says, right, there's a chance now that some of us might get out. So I set them off in fours. I sent Sergeant Walton in four, then Lieutenant Lax and Captain Balance and two others, they went. I said, I'm not telling you which way to go. You all know where you are. I says, go in different directions, and probably, I says, hopefully, some will get back and be able to report what's happened. So that's how we did. And then there was two shouted out, two got wounded, one in the feet and one in the arm. So I put two men each side of them, and one man each side of them. This is where his only injuries really had occurred.
This happened during the action?
This is during when we were moving to go out. And I said, you better stay with me and my lot. So there was myself and four, and then two, and one each side of them to help the injured. And I said, I'll go first. I says, we'll have to crawl, and you'll have to drag these two. So I says, I'll go very slowly. I'll make sure that the one behind me is still there before I move on. I said, and so that we'll probably have to take a zigzag course, because he'll have patrols now by now on his outside. So I said, we'll have to trust to luck. So I set forth and crawled forward. Then we stopped and listened and crawled a bit further forward. I think they were all more or less exhausted, because we could, I don't think we could have walked very far in any case. So we crawled slowly and did a zigzag course. If I could hear the Germans whispering, I steered clear of that area and worked over to the other side. When I heard them on the other side, I worked back and made a more or less a zigzag course up to the river bank. And once I got to the river bank, I thought, well, we've got some safety here, and if I can, we get other side, we can stand up then and start moving. So we eventually got to the river bank, and we got these two across, got across the river. It wasn't very high, it wasn't a deep one at all, but we got across, got to the bank at the other side, had a rest, and I said, right, we can proceed now to the woods on the south of just at the south of Sedney, where I knew the colonel and them would be. And as soon as we stood up, We hadn't walked a few yards, but very lights went all up in the air and lighted all the sky. So down we went, down straight away. And I says, right, when they die out, up and move. Oh, as soon as they died out, up and went as far as we could. Next ones were up, coming up. So we were down again, and we were up and down until we got clear of where the very lights were. And then eventually found the entrance into the wood. And there was, I think it was Sergeant Martin who was there. And it's, who goes there? And I told him, Sergeant Drayton, with 10 others. Oh, he says, just follow this path and you'll come to the quartermaster's truck, he says, and the colonel's there. So I followed the path through into the wood, and the colonel was there, and I reported that so many, 2 wounded. He put his arms round me, kissed me on the cheek. Tears were falling down his eyes, and I could understand it perfectly. He'd been there, seen all this going off, the place set alight, thinking all the last of his soup, burnt to death, sort of thing. And here was me again, bringing home some of the troops. And it was very, very emotional, there's no doubt about that. Very, very emotional. And we saw to the 2 injured getting back to the medical quarters, and I don't know what happened to them after that, but we stayed there. And eventually, during the hours of early morning, it was early morning when we got back, but I happened to be the first back for some unknown reason, and I'd not taking a direct route. Eventually, Captain Balance, Lieutenant Lax, and his party came back. The only ones who were missed out were Sergeant Walton. His party didn't get back. So we'd lost 4, but at least all the rest got back. So 4 were taken prisoner.
You mentioned Private Pletz before, was he?
Private Pletz, he was with us. He was one of the 20. He was a Bren gunner. I'm trying to think of the other lad who was a Bren gunner.
And he was one of the wounded that you brought back?
No, he wasn't one of the wounded. He was all right. Pletz. Maurice Pletz, they called him. Maurice's first name was. George Graham, that was my Bren gunner. I've just remembered his name, George Graham. As I said earlier, he was a very intelligent lad, very clever lad. He'd been educated very well. And he was with us, of course, with George. And it was the one who I'd met up with when I fell, rolled down the hill. He was more or less my Bren gunner. Or George Graham, his name was George Graham. So that was that story. And
now, while you'd been involved in your action, the rifle companies had been trying to get up the other hills.
I don't know what they'd been trying to do. Well,
apparently,
this last action of ours was to save the Sedgenin from the Germans attacking on the left flank. Well, on our left flank, on theirs, it would be their right flank, but it was our left flank, which we'd done to as capacity, really, because they never came in from that flank after.
But apparently, in the meantime, the rifle companies had tried to get onto the German hills,
yeah,
possibly to your right, A, B, C and D company?
Oh, they were further out on the left. We were more or less towards this particular hill where I'd been on the right-hand side, where I'd been with the Vickers, from where we lost it, of course, because we never got to leave the Vickers to get out.
So
couldn't
you
take
back,
that back.
You got back to the quartermaster's truck.
That's right. And, all we wanted was something to drink, because, believe me, while we'd been stood in them trenches, we were with no water, and I'd been in this right from the day before, because I'd been dragging the carriers out all during one night, and then I was in all next day. So I was in a pretty bad state, really. I didn't realise it, but all we wanted was something to drink, and I opened a tin of fruit and drunk. It was glorious, straight out of the can. fruit juice. And of course we did get some food then later on when the quartermaster's truck and food got going again. But all right, during this we had this chocolate, of course. I think I ate bars of chocolates, and so did the lads. That was his emergency ration. We had to use those both on going up into action and all during time we was doing, because I'd never seen food since first going up with the Vickers gun.
Now, what did you think of the emergency ration? Did it
serve? Well, they worked, but one that was in squares. I think the 3, 6, 9 squares. I think there was 9 squares in each. But they said one square was equivalent to a meal, but I didn't restrict myself to one square. And when I got back and saw the quartermaster and Captain Quartermaster, he would always hand us another one, and same with the troops. He was generous enough with that. There was no restrictions. There aren't when you get in them situations. There's no really restrictions of what you're supposed to do with the such things as your emergency rations. So we used quite a few of those during the process of the battle.
Now, what was your understanding then, and what had happened to the rifle companies during this? What had they been doing?
I had no recollection. I'd only seen odd ones sort of going up and coming back, and the ones I had brought with me at Dark Tack were in darkness, who were lost in the terrain, and I was never close enough. It was either back or right forward, and when we were forward we were doing this stuff, and when we were back we could only I understood they were more or less wiped out. But
what did you think about what had happened to them then? Because obviously in your position you're in a dominating position with the Germans coming over open ground.
Yeah.
And apparently the rifle companies were in the reverse of that. They were advancing over open ground towards...
I don't recollect the rifle companies being there at all then, when we were operated the what I call the decoy.
Right, Mr. Drake, so we're still talking about Sedunain.
Yes.
The rifle companies and your understanding of what happened to them.
Yes, well, when we got back and daylight broke, my understanding was that the rifle companies, A, B, C and D, of course, had been wiped out, more or less. And as it broke daylight on the next morning, there was very little of DLI about, only the ones that I'd brought back from the operation that we'd been in. And things were in a bit of a mystery. We did hear that some of the foresters had been drafted in. They said they were all crocs or something, and but they had got some. They'd managed to get a train up during the night with some tanks on. Said they were Churchill tanks, but I'd had no experience with tanks at the time, so. The 16th DLI was sort of non-existent, and as far as I were concerned, and there were nobody there to see, giving any instructions or anything, so I decided to grab a rifle and go up with the tank.
This is an interview with She.